You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to A Pod of Their Own. This is episode 193 of A Pod of Their Own. I am Allison McCaig, and I am joined this week by my lovely co-hosts, Linda Sarovich. Hello, Linda.
Hey, Allison.
And Maggie Wiggin. Hello, Maggie.
Hi, Allison.
So the Mets did it. They signed J.D. Martinez to a one-year, $12 million deal in the 11th hour. They saw 50 spring training at bats of Mark Vientos and decided, no, thank you. We don't want that.
Yeah.
Mets sign one player challenge. Complete.
Complete. obviously.
Also, so was it a lie the entire time when Stearns was like, we're confident in Vientos and Stewart?
I think so.
Yeah. But... yeah. Like, there is no way you were confident in Vientos and Stewart. I'm sorry.
They were confident in Vientos and Stewart when J.D. Martinez necessitated a two-year deal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's out there. They were talking to Martinez's people all off-season, which we knew they were. But also, like, obviously, if they were talking to him, it was because they weren't super happy with their existing options.
But Martino insisted they were, Maggie. You don't believe Andy Martino?
What's an Andy Martino?
What is an Andy Martino? So yeah, it was a very necessary signing. I think the Mets, spring training doesn't mean much, but it's not just Mark Vientos. The Mets' entire offense has looked really, really rough this spring. And I just feel like, even though that's not necessarily meaningful in a statistical sense, it does, like, it's meaningful in a vibes sense. It's meaningful in that it underscores the need to get one more additional professional hitter in the lineup. And J.D. Martinez is certainly that.
Well, I think
it is kind of insane how cheap he fell, given that he's coming off of, like, one of his best seasons. Like, he had 134 OPS plus last year. Not one of his best seasons. Obviously, his peak was kind of bonkers. But that's still, like, that is one of the better players on the Mets, for example.
Yeah, he instantly becomes the Mets, like, third best hitter.
Well, and also, I wonder if they were well, like, maybe if Beatty played better, you could roll with Vientos and Stewart and see what you have. But you can't have two black holes in the lineup like that.
Yeah.
And I see why Beatty is getting kind of the first crack.
Yes, yes.
Yes. He's
like, I'm fine with that.
He's shown more flashes this spring. He's shown more flashes in general of like capability of success at the big league level than Mark Vientos has. And he plays, even though neither of them are like whizzes defensively, Beatty is at least more competent defensively at third base. So I think, yeah, it's obvious that he had the edge there. Yeah, this definitely signifies a loss in trust in Mark Vientos. And Mark Vientos, like, voiced his displeasure about this, which on one hand, it's kind of like, well, you put yourself in this situation, Mark. But on the other hand, like, I get it. Like, yeah. Anyone in that situation is going to be upset. He just lost his job.
And he did work hard. He was there with Lindor in the offseason. He put in the work. It's just the talent's not there to back it up.
And, you know, that doesn't mean that he's never going to be successful in the big leagues. He's still young. There's still plenty of time. I don't think he's like, you know, done forever. I don't think this is the last shot he's going to get.
I don't think it's the last shot he's going to get in the first half of the season.
No, probably yeah. not.
I mean, he truly, exactly. If anything happens to any right-handed bat, he's probably the next guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Unless they want to call up one of the prospects, like the real prospects, not to be rude, but
I mean, yeah, there's a chance. I mean, I guess it depends on who gets hurt, right? Infielder or outfielder.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, a lot of the outfield prospects are kind of close to ready, but the infield prospects are a little less ready. So, yeah, there may be others that are ahead of him in the pecking order, but we'll have to see how all of them perform in the minor leagues. And it'll probably be, you know, merit-based, at least one hopes.
Well, and also, how sad is it that the Mets are looking for players off the scrap heap instead of just activating DJ Stewart and putting him on the roster?
Right. So
like, that also tells you what they think of DJ Stewart.
Yeah, we'll cover like final roster spot decisions in a bit when we're done talking about JD Martinez. But one of those is that DJ Stewart is like weirdly going north with the team, but the Mets have yet to actually commit to him making the roster. It's an awkward thing where he's seemingly the guy, but the Mets are still shopping. And
feeling very much like if neither of us are married by the time we turn 40 sort of situation.
Exactly. Yeah.
Except that only the Mets get to choose it.
Which is both, I think, I mean, I tweeted this and I got a lot of pushback for it. And I can understand what some people in my replies are saying, like this sort of stuff is common. They're just being opportunistic, et cetera, et cetera. But it feels like a bit of an indictment of their offseason that they're not happy with the roster that they've built on March 26th, as we record this, like 2 days before opening day. The Mets are displeased with their roster.
It's not unusual for me to be rushing through finishing a project at the last minute, but that doesn't mean it's like a good thing. No. It's not the goal in all of this for me to be rushing through a project at the last minute.
That doesn't mean you shouldn't have done more work on it earlier.
I do, but I also will not. So
exactly. Yeah. So that's an interesting thing. But we'll see what happens. They're still shopping in the bargain bin.
Is because they signed JD Martinez so late, he can't join the team. So they are stuck with either the scrap heap or DJ Stewart. So again, you weren't prepared for the season.
Yeah, yeah. JD Martinez is going to, with his own permission, like with the Mets got permission from him, because obviously you can't just like send a guy send a veteran to the minors without his permission. He's going to start the season in the minors. A minor league assignment is a minimum of 10 days. So the earliest that he can join the team is April 7th. And he, you know, he has to get ready for the season. He has to do extended spring basically and face live pitching. There seems to be optimism that he will join the team, if not on April 7th, pretty soon after that. So it won't be that much time, but yeah, for 10 days, the Mets need to make do with what they have.
Can we not do this again next year, Mets? Just sign players, please.
Yeah, like I know that they weren't happy with JD Martinez's price earlier in the offseason, clearly, but like how much more was it really? Like,
you're Steve Cohen. Come on. You're pinching on one player. Come on.
Like, oh no, we have to do 2 years, $20 million instead. Oh,
I feel like this is the case where like that is not, that buys you the reliability of knowing that your team is coming together and getting all that time to practice and get in a rhythm. I don't know. I mean, it just feels like, isn't that why you get rich, so that you can do things like making it easier by hiring the guy sooner, even if it means paying him a little more money? I don't.
Yeah, like a thing.
But yeah, I mean, overall, better late than never. This was an obvious decision to make, and I'm very happy that the Mets have made it.
Mets are happy the Mets have made it.
Clearly. And Pete Alonso is another guy who's very happy. He spoke glowingly of the signing and called him a hitting savant. And he said, huge shout out to David Stearns and Steve Cohen. It's a huge message to the guys in the clubhouse. So, like, I think it's a good thing when the player that you're trying to keep, your franchise player that you're trying to keep around, is happy because you're actually trying. I think that you're signaling to him that you're trying. I think that's a good thing to do, in my opinion.
Keeping Pete happy is a good sign.
So, and multiple guys have already remarked upon the hitting savant thing. Like, JD Martinez is clearly a guy, like, regardless of how he actually ends up performing this year on the field, is clearly a guy that like knows his craft very well and works very hard at it and is a positive influence in the clubhouse in that regard. And not to do the whole like veteran presence thing, but he clearly brings that, it seems.
Was he on the text chain with Steve Cohen and Francisco Lindor, or was that somebody else?
It's Pete Alonso, Francisco Lindor, and Brandon Nimmo are a group text. Yeah,
that is the group chat of of my dreams.
I know. Like
who think they share recipes? I hope they do.
Somebody I can't remember who on Twitter was like, me and Pete probably just keeps blasting them with memes and gifs, and Brandon Nimmo just posts Bible verses.
Brandon Nimmo just like thumbs up reacts to everything.
Or Francisco Lindor
shares selfies.
Yeah,
shares Kalina, like cute videos of Kalina.
Yeah.
and Pete Alonso just like sends dog videos.
Or yeah. Says like that's dope multiple times.
That's dope.
Spelling errors.
Yeah, it's like I'm wondering how much I have to pay and who to get in this group text.
I'm also willing to pay a very talented writer to produce their theories of what this group chat would look like. I probably will not pay, but
we need to find the best.
It would be very funny.
The best improv troupe in all the land to perform this group text.
It would be art. It would absolutely be art. Like, if there's like a drama student that needs to like put on like a one person show to like get in Juilliard or something, they could totally nail that and get into Juilliard.
Yes, I would. They should put me on the admissions committee. I'd be all for it.
And with a scholarship,
full scholarship. unfortunately, the corresponding move that the Mets made in order to add JD Martinez to the roster was designating Phil Bickford for assignment. And the unfortunate part about that is that Phil Bickford has fallen victim to the JD Davis treatment, in that he is now not going to make his full arbitration salary. Aww. He's in the same situation as JD Davis, where he took the Mets to arbitration and therefore his salary was not guaranteed. And that so sucks. That sucks.
Yeah, that's rude.
So the Mets pulled the Giants on him, which is really unfortunate and not a good thing for the organization to have done, really. But
And he was giving us the social media content too. He was always down for whatever they were asking.
I know.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, sad. Phil. It wasn't our fault.
But yeah, so the other roster decisions that have been made so far, we talked about DJ Stewart going north with the team. So it seems like he is the JD Martinez sort of spot on the roster, but they haven't actually confirmed that yet, but we'll see if they do. Therefore, G-Man Choi did not make the roster because he was sort of competing for that role with DJ Stewart. But he also didn't exercise his opt-out, so he will be in the minor leagues. So the Mets will have depth in that sort of like DH, part-time DH role, which is good. But if anything is signaling a lack of trust or like a loss of trust in Mark Vientos, not only did they sign JD Martinez, even though JD Martinez is not ready for the season, Mark Vientos still didn't make the roster. Zach Short made the roster over Mark Vientos. So
I mean, it's hard to argue for Mark Vientos if he's not getting regular turns at DH, because you don't really want him at third over Beatty. You don't want him at first over Alonso. So where is he playing?
Yeah,
exactly. And Zach Short gives you more utility in the infield. So
I'd rather have Zach Short in like a more of a utility guy bench role. Vientos just needs to hit every day. Like he's got to be able to get in a rhythm if he is going to get better.
Yeah, he's not going to get better. He's not going to get better by languishing on the bench. So
yeah.
So Tylor McGill officially secured the final spot in the rotation. That's not necessarily a surprise to anyone. He was clearly the front runner for that and performed well this spring and earned it. So he will be the fifth starter. And the Mets will have pretty good starting pitching depth, which I'm sure they will blow through by May, in the minor leagues, but at least starting off, they'll have good starting pitching depth in the minor leagues.
It's too bad they don't have good starting pitching depth in the major leagues.
Yeah,
I know.
I feel like it's all part of the same depth.
Yeah, but they do have both Joey Lucchese and Jose Budo in the minor leagues. So that's good for them because they are probably going to need both those guys at some point in the season. So those guys will be waiting in the wings for the next guy to get hurt.
Terrible or just be really bad.
Yeah.
Or now that there's a chance that opening day will get rained out. And then they will push the game till Friday. The Mets will have like 14 days in a row with no off day or something like that at one point. So yeah, they're gonna need a spot starter regardless, like pretty early on. So yeah, I think that both Budo and Lucchese will get their chance. Probably Budo first because he had a really, really good spring.
Budo looked great.
Yeah, he looked really good. It's not unfortunate. It's good for the Mets, but it's unfortunate for Budo because, like, you know, his biggest competitor also had such a good spring. Like Tylor McGill and Budo both look great.
How many times can we put our faith in Tylor McGill?
I mean, at least one more time.
I do think this is the last one.
Yeah,
Yeah.
I think so too.
Like we've been down
one
this
last
road
heist
before.
And then we retire.
And I mean, like, if he pitches well, then that's good because I think that gives the Mets a lot of flexibility to like go to a six man if they want, or like, you know, option him and then, you know, have even better depth once Kodai Senga returns. So yeah, I mean, I hope that he's good. It would really help the Mets if that success
translates.
He's
always seemed to have it in him somewhere.
He's always good in April. And then after that. So maybe if Kodai Senga comes back in May, it'll be fine.
I was gonna say we basically just need April Tylor McGill. That's it. So
works for me.
Yeah. So the kind of final roster decision is that the bullpen is mostly set, but there's kind of two spots for three guys. And they're kind of waiting until the last second to make that decision. So right now they have like one more reliever still on the roster than is ultimately going to be on the roster. So they have three guys, none of which have options remaining. So whoever they do not have on the opening day roster, they're going to have to designate for assignment a la Phil Bickford. They have Sean Reed Foley, Michael Tonkin, and Yoan Ramirez. I think that Michael Tonkin is the most likely out of those three. And so I think it is likely that Sean Reed Foley and Yoan Ramirez, they're kind of deciding between those two for the other spot. Both had good spring trainings. I think Yoan Ramirez looked a little bit better than Sean Reed Foley. And I admit to not having watched all the spring training games or even the majority of them. But
you weren't running to the TV to catch the Sean Reed Foley at bats. Jesus. But, and you call yourself a king of spring training writer?
I know. Seriously. Ugh. I yeah, I know. I'm sorry, guys. sorry. March has been a crazy month. But in the appearances I've seen, Yoan Ramirez looked insanely good, and I think that he deserves a shot. But we'll see what they do with that. They're taking that decision down to the wire. So that's kind of the last decision to be made. And then there's your 2024 New York Mets roster.
Not a moment too soon.
Yeah.
Just in time for the rainout.
Yep.
Yeah, seriously. It would be so anticlimactic, right? It's like, oh my God, I'm so excited for opening day and it's rained out.
Well, especially since this happened last year too.
Yes, it did. It did.
Well, and I just got an invitation to the game.
Oh.
And I found childcare.
Oh.
So
can you not go Friday?
I can't go Friday. The schools are closed.
Oh.
Like, so what I'll do is I'll say, anybody listening to this, if you can go on Thursday and you can't go Friday, please tell me and I'll buy your tickets if you have three tickets, because I will take the kids. There's no school. If I can get tickets, I will take the kids. That's way better. But I don't know that I'm going to be able to get three affordable tickets for
opening day.
So keep me in your thoughts.
You heard it. You heard her here first, folks. Keep Maggie in your thoughts. Let her have your tickets.
Or at least some sunshine on Thursday.
Good vibes.
Or just pray to the weather gods on her behalf.
Positive energy. I'm very tired. It's been a long week.
Before we move on to wider baseball news, of which everybody knows there's a heck of a lot of it. Mostly just one big story. Before we move on to that, which we have to talk about, the elephant in the room here, I will end our sort of Mets segment with a positive note, which is, I just saw this tweet earlier this evening. Liz Ben shared that the Mets organization currently has the most female coaches in baseball.
Oh,
which is really cool and exciting and of a great news for this podcast. We love to hear that.
So. That's really cool.
Yep.
Well, with someone like Liz also, I mean, that's a really great endorsement. That's someone who's really casting the organization in good light. Yeah, I think that's she deserves a lot of the credit for all that.
Yeah.
Yep. So we're hype about that. We love Liz. We love friend of the pod, Liz Ben, here on the show. So this is that it's really awesome that the Mets have that distinction about them to have the most female coaches in baseball.
Especially the turnaround from the Wilpon era when it was toxic for women.
Yep.
So now it's nice that hopefully it's more a more welcoming place for women.
Exactly.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle, a run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Now we must talk about what is the biggest baseball story going on right now. Sadly, which is that, you know, it's
biggest baseball story in years.
In years.
I mean, and it's sadly, in many, many years.
Overshadowing opening day somewhat. It's like there's all this excitement. We're about to start this a new season, but everybody's talking about this. And
well, it, right in the middle of the Dodgers opening day.
Yeah.
Exactly. Not really. Woof. The timing doesn't get worse.
Yeah.
It's all awful. It's all awful.
Yeah. So this has the potential to be the biggest baseball story, like Maggie said, in years or maybe like, of sports. The decade.
The of sports, the repercussions of this
are very wide ranging.
Yeah.
No. So,
Let's get into it. We'll start with sort of the timeline of events, which is wild in and of itself before we even get into any of the implications of any of this or any of the possible scenarios that could play out from here. But even just the things that have already unfolded in the, like, you know, 4 days, this has been, it feels like so much longer that this has been a story. But it really has just been a rapid fire of developments in the past few days. So we're recording this on Tuesday night. Last week, late Wednesday afternoon, on March 20th, so that's 6 days ago, news broke that the Dodgers were firing their interpreter, Ibe Mizuhara, for involvement with illegal gambling. The initial story was that Shohei Ohtani, who is his personal friend, you know, Mizuhara is his interpreter, brought over from the Angels, and now employed by the Dodgers, Shohei Ohtani's new team.
And to be fair, even before this story, there were reports on the closeness of their relationship, that it was almost like a, I guess, personal assistant, bestie sort of role.
He called him, like, he's referred to him as his brother, that he's like his brother. Yeah. Like, they are reportedly best friends, and they act like it. Like, we've seen them interact. Like, they are clearly close to each other.
They were still friendly that day.
That same day. Yes. Because as we referred to the timing of this, the Dodgers were already playing games that count in the season. The Dodgers and Padres were playing in South Korea. And they had played their first game earlier that day. And it was a 2-game series. They played the first game earlier that day. And then that evening, the news broke.
And they were seen acting normal in the dugout together.
Yes. They were acting as if nothing was wrong. Which at least that supports Ohtani's story. But we'll get into that later. But, you know, people can act, I suppose. We'll get into that later. But the initial story was that Shohei Ohtani made a loan to Ibe to cover his gambling debt, which is a staggering $4.5 million. And the initial story was that he made loans to him in $500,000 increments. And ESPN was set to publish this on March 19th, which would have been Tuesday, the day before the news actually came out. March 19th, there was an interview in which Mizuhara and an Ohtani spokesperson, not just Mizuhara, an Ohtani spokesperson as well, were interviewed and told this story to ESPN. And ESPN was set to publish this. But then the story quickly changed, and Ohtani's attorneys were then suddenly accusing Mizuhara of massive theft of Ohtani's funds. Massive theft is the phrase they keep throwing out over and over. Massive theft of Ohtani's funds. And that is what was published in the LA Times on Wednesday evening. And that is what he was fired for. So the league then, so now we're moving from, so this broke on Wednesday. The league announced they would be investigating the matter at 6 o'clock p.m. on Friday. Of course, they news dumped it on a Friday evening after everyone had logged off for the day, during right in the middle of March Madness basketball.
Yep. That is their brand.
Yep. They waited 2 days and then they decided, okay, we're gonna do an investigation. Obviously, in the meantime, all sorts of conspiracy theories are flying because we have so little information about what happened and what's the truth, and we don't know anything. And so everybody's tweeting, everybody's speculating about what could be going on. Otani said that he would address the media on Sunday over the weekend, but then clarified to say he would be reading a statement instead and would not answer questions, and cameras wouldn't be allowed in the room. So that's
which
what happened.
Also, which is definitely crazy, but at the same time, like, he shouldn't. I would not let him talk and answer questions to the press about this like major huge scandal. Like, I don't think he should have been there at all. It was just
cool. Yeah, I mean, legally, it is the correct strategy to not say anything or like just read your statement and not answer open and not just answer any question from the media when there's a current investigation into your conduct. Yes. But also at the same time, it's kind of like, you know, Shohei Ohtani has a history of, I guess, having his own special rules when it comes to engagement with the media.
That is also true.
It's the reason he signed with the Dodgers, because it's clear that they would let him continue to like not answer questions from the media, basically, and maintain a level of private life, which is fine. But, you know, other players have to stand in front of their lockers and answer questions, and he hasn't been made to. And this is like, you know, in this case, there's legal reasons why he shouldn't be answering questions, but also it's just kind of like there's a level of accountability that others have been held to that he has not been held to, because mm-hmm. he's a big star, which is fine. I mean, like, you know, he's baseball's biggest star. He's really, really exciting to watch, and he makes a lot of money, and he makes baseball a lot of money. So like, I get it, but it's also kind of just like, you know, being treated with kid gloves a little bit compared to other players. So in that statement that he read, he reiterated that Mizuhara was stealing from him, had lied to him, had lied repeatedly, and betrayed him. He claims that he never knew anything about what Mizuhara was doing about this gambling debt until the other day when this all came out. Ohtani claims he has never bet on baseball or any other sport. He's not involved in any way. He's never asked someone to do it on his behalf. None of the bets are believed to be on baseball.
The statement, I think, is where it gets worse, because not anybody can just submit a wire transfer from your own bank account. There's security checks involved. So money can't just come out of Shohei Ohtani's bank account just because eBay had access to it. That's not how it works.
Well, I think it's a heck of a gamble. It's certainly the story that would make him least culpable for anything. It also seems like it would be the easiest to disprove.
Disprove, yeah.
So I guess now we wait.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess the question would be, you know, can we trust MLB to accurately investigate and report a situation that is so damning to them? But I think we kind of have to assume that they will, because otherwise it's just all a clown show.
Like, if the wire transfer came from his bank account, whether he knew it or not, that means he's involved. So if it came from his bank account, that's a problem. And if it could be proven that it came from his bank account, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
Because like I said, there's security checks involved. One person, they're going to make sure the person who is transferring $500,000 is really you.
Yeah. I think that there's like a sort of range of plausible theories here, and obviously the far left and right tails are less likely than everything in the middle. One far tail being, this is Otani's gambling problem, and he is the one, and his interpreter and friend is taking the fall for him. Like, he is the one placing these bets but he is just allowing his interpreter to take the fall. That is the most extreme theory out there, conspiracy. I think it's irresponsible to like put that out there even as a theory, because we don't know that based on the facts that we know, which is very little. So I think to posit that somebody is a problem gambler when you don't know them is sort of weird. And I also think it's sort of weird to, on the other hand, on the other far end of the spectrum, insist that Shohei Ohtani, it's impossible that he could be a problem gambler because like of the person that he is. You don't know anything about him. That's like kind of his whole deal.
We didn't know he was married up until like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. If you don't even know he had a secret wife, like you don't know if he like is or is not a gambler. We don't know.
As many folks, including us, have been trying to warn MLB and others for years, is that gambling addiction is really common. It is very common, and it's very serious.
And it's now easier too.
Yeah, it's very easy, and it is very easy to hide. You know, if you have a lot of money to work with, that helps. But this idea that it couldn't happen is very naive.
Yeah. And so it's kind of these are either extreme ends of the spectrum. Like Ohtani is really the problem gambler here, or Ohtani knew absolutely nothing. He is innocent. I put innocent in air quotes because like he is guilty of something regardless. And maybe that something is just being way too trusting and naive and allowing his friend to do all of this behind his back, in which case, like, that's really unfortunate, but also really, really naive of you to allow this level of access to someone who's like not.
That to me is actually one of the more plausible theories.
Yeah.
That he's got his brother and he doesn't want to be dealing with the money stuff. Like that's boring and he's not good at it and he wants to think about baseball and he wants to rest. Doesn't he sleep like 11 hours a day or something? But and so
I thought that was you, Darvish, who said that. Might have been wrong.
His buddy, his brother, whoever, you know, this guy who, like, sure, just take care of it. I mean, I feel like that's the most plausible one to me, is that he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer and just sort of let his bro have much more control over his life than he should have.
A professional athlete, not the sharpest knife in the drawer, well, you don't say.
Baseball players are particularly notorious for lacking the upstairs activity.
My personal feeling about all of this, given that I know just as much as you listening, as anybody else, I have no insider info. I don't know anything, but my personal feeling on this is that I think that Ohtani knowingly gave him the money to bail out his friend. Because that is why the ESPN story was different initially. I think that in the ESPN interview, they were trying to tell the truth. And then they realized, oh, shit. If this gets published, this is Shohei Ohtani admitting to a federal crime.
Yeah.
We cannot let this get out. We can't let this get out because he's admitting to a crime. Okay, we have to walk it back and do a version where he's not doing a crime.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is happening here. I don't actually know that. Again, it could be true that Ipe was lying this whole time, because you know it could have been that he was lying in that interview, but there was an Ohtani spokesperson at that interview also. So it's not like it's just Ipe spouting by himself, like just saying all these lies, possibly. But I'm not saying he's not lying either, because we don't know. Because we also know, what we do know is that Ipe has a history of lying about other things. He lied about where he went to school, for example. He lied about being employed by the Red Sox organization years ago, said he was.
Does nobody check references? I mean, come on.
I know, it's so weird. I'm like, why is the standard for like being hired by a Major League Baseball team like not like like a lower standard than like what Indeed.com does? Like, are you kidding me? I don't know. So like clearly this man has lied about other stuff. So like he is clearly capable of lying about things. But yeah, that's just what I think. That's my hunch. I have no idea if it's true. But my hunch is that Otani gave this guy the money and then they realized that he can't tell the truth because the truth is a crime. But then, like, ironically enough, if it is found out that he is lying about this and this goes to, you know, some sort of like court over eBay's crimes, then, and Shohei Ohtani is found to be lying about his involvement or lack thereof, then that is also a crime. So,
well, to be fair, the lying isn't a crime until he's lying to the cops about it. I don't think he's done that part yet.
He can lie to Major League Baseball, I guess.
Yeah. So I would say, like, step one would be he's banned for baseball.
Yeah.
That's sort of the worst.
What all this comes down to is this is yet another black eye for the sport. You got
and their best thing.
Yes.
Their best dude all around is just totally struck down.
And do we trust Manfred really to handle it properly?
No, I don't. And the league has a vested interest in this man not going down, very specifically.
Because this could be another steroids kind of deal where it's like, we want steroids in the game so people will watch. This is kind of the same thing. Like, we need Shohei Ohtani to play so people will watch.
Exactly.
And bet on the games.
And that's why I think that we may never know the full truth.
No. It's not like they're going to do any self-reflection about the Nationals having betting right in their stadium or the Cubs having betting right in their stadium. There's going to be no,
for better or worse, this is not going to be the last one.
No, it won't.
There was another one, like there was a college athlete like the exact same day or day or two later who got in trouble for betting. Like it's, and this, that there are colleges that are allowing sports betting companies to advertise on campus to undergrads is all part of what's wrong with all of this. But I just completely lost my train of thought. Sorry. My daughter caught my attention and she got it. She went.
I will say, like, I want to talk about, like, the, you know, the hold, the increased holds that sports betting has upon the very fabric of baseball. We've talked about this on the podcast before, well before this scandal. Is there a direct cause and effect? No, because baseball has always had an illegal gambling problem. Pete Rose is exhibit A. And that was long before, you know, DraftKings existed, right? But
the Black Sox, obviously.
The Black Sox, way before DraftKings existed. There are plenty of instances in history of this. And this specific scandal is not anything like the Black Sox scandal, because it's not, even if it's Shohei Ohtani doing these bets, the worst case scenario, it's not him. As far as we know now, obviously, like, more things could come out, I guess. As far as we know now, none of these bets are on, like, games that Shohei Ohtani is playing in. And there's no evidence to suggest, there are people making conspiracy theory tweets. I've seen them. But there is no actual real evidence to suggest that Shohei Ohtani is throwing games because he's betting on his
own. As a data professional, I assure you, you can tie pitcher wins and losses to anything you want. You give me that correlation, I will find it for you.
And also, oh no, what it is. He won an MVP throwing games.
God, imagine.
Right? But what I will say is that, you know, Major League Baseball selling its soul for money, as always, tying itself irrevocably to these sports books is impacting our national culture. It's not just baseball culture. It's our national culture, our world culture, our societal culture, quite frankly, because it becomes easier and easier for problem gamblers to, you know, to become it becomes easier and easier to create addicts.
Well, and like I've never placed a bet in my life.
Maybe I
am prone to addiction and gambling. I have many other things that might correlate with that. But like, I wouldn't know. But if I was 18 years old, and I know you have to be 21, yeah, that obviously works. And if I'm 18 years old and there's ads popping up in my face all the time during my favorite game, I'd probably try it.
Yeah.
And that's why it works. And that's how it happens.
Just like any other vice.
It's like the ultimate gateway drug. And they, especially because a lot of these like short-term bets are the ones that are the most addictive.
Yes.
Because it seems harmless in the beginning.
Yeah. And they're little and they're fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as soon as it's over, you can do another one.
Oh my, it's extreme. We're all just like stupid little rats pushing the lever and getting the treat. Like that's
dopamine is a hell of a drug. Literally. Dopamine is literally a hell of a drug.
So like but it's just unfortunate on a societal level that like, and it's not just baseball, all sports are like the legalization of sports gambling it's a poison. It's poison. It's terrible for the game.
And they are only caring about the money button that keeps getting pushed. Just keep pushing the money button and that's that.
Yep. And I mean, another detail of this is like, you really have to wonder how a guy who makes, you know, a few hundred thousand dollars a year, which is a very nice salary, gets a line of credit that large with a bookie because he's $4.5 million in debt. Most guys would not, like, he would have been not allowed to keep placing bets long ago.
No.
Long ago. So either he is using his connection to Ohtani to say, my friend is covering this. I'm friends with Shohei Ohtani, the multimillionaire, the, you know, guy who makes tens of millions of dollars a year. Or, you know, it's more direct than that, right? Because otherwise, how is this man getting this much of a line of credit?
Well, and how bad is he that you get $4 million in debt?
I mean, it can happen really easy.
Yeah, it's fast.
I also wouldn't be surprised if he had like different bookies.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just kind of try it everything. Cause that's what it really is. It functions like an addiction. You're going out and looking for the next score and, you know, doing whatever it takes to get there.
Yeah. Like, nope, the next one is going to be when my luck turns.
Yep.
And this specific ring that's being investigated, it's worth pointing out, this specific illegal operation has been tied to athletes in the past and, you know, is known for serving athletes who are gambling illegally. So this is just like, you know, another kind of red flag in the whole situation. It's just the whole thing is terrible. It's a bad situation and it's suspicious, and it really, really sucks that baseball's best player is involved in this. It sucks. It makes me really sad because like I made a tweet criticizing Ohtani for not answering questions. There were people criticizing me because they thought I didn't understand that he was under active investigation. Yes, I understand that. But people seem to think I was like praying for his downfall or the Dodgers' downfall. I'm not. It would be terrible for the sport.
There are a lot of people who are actually calling for it as like a screw you to the Dodgers, and that is disgusting.
That's awful. I hate that. I don't want Shohei Ohtani to be banned from baseball. That would be awful because I would not be able to watch Shohei Ohtani play baseball anymore.
Well, and while we're on that subject, please do not compare him to Pete Rose. We are not making those comparisons.
Oh, yeah. No, Pete
Rose. And we don't need to hear from Pete Rose. We don't need that right now.
his Pete Rose's gambling is like the fifth worst thing about him. So like enough with that. Like Shohei Ohtani's not like all these other things that Pete Rose is, at least that we know of. God, I hope not.
God, yeah.
Never have heroes.
Yeah. So no, that's no, we're not doing that.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yep. I hope this is the last y'all have to hear from us on this subject, and I don't think it will be.
No,
probably not. But we'll see what the investigation uncovers. And in the meantime, I guess Shohei Ohtani's gonna keep playing baseball.
Because I mean, yay, at least.
No indication that he's not going to. So yeah, like it's not like he's been placed on administrative leave or anything like that. So what's funny is if it wasn't for this massive gambling scandal that's like, you know, the biggest scandal Major League Baseball has seen since the sign stealing scandal, and may end up being like even worse than that, this other thing that we're now going to talk about would have been like the most forefront topic in baseball heading into opening day, which is that there's like major tension and shakeups happening in the Players Association.
Like out of nowhere?
Out of nowhere. Yeah. It's come out of absolutely nowhere. It seemed like they were like, yay, the CBA is great. Like, obviously, everyone knows it's not perfect, but it seemed like everybody was like pleased with it. And we were a year in and everyone was like, yeah, CBA is great. All of a sudden, there seems to be like a major split within the Players Association.
Factions involved?
Yeah, there are now factions in the union.
And there was like a coup attempt?
Sort of, yeah. There's one contingent that is looking to replace Deputy Director Bruce Meyer with 33-year-old Harry Marino. Harry Marino, for those of you who don't know, was like one of the leading figures in the advocates for minor leaguers, and he sort of was the most prominent negotiator at the table for the minor leaguers, and kind of was the figure who helped integrate the minor leaguers into the major league union, right?
So he's already sort of had a major hand in like modernizing the union and moving it along progression to a more kind of equitable organization.
Yeah.
Is my understanding.
And it seems like he kind of has, because he's sort of the one who organized the minor leaguers, he sort of has the ear of a lot of the younger guys and their support. And there has always been this rift between, even in baseball, even among rich people, there's the haves and the have-nots, obviously. There's the top stars in the game, the Shohei Ohtanis of the world, who are not the majority of baseball players, right? The majority of baseball players are, you know, fighting for their $1.2 million in arbitration, if they even make it to arbitration for their whole careers, right? So there seems to be, you know, this fight, this tension between those two factions, like those who seem to be fighting for the guys at the top, and those who are fighting for, you know, the rest of the players. And so this faction wanted to sort of do a coup and replace Meyer with Marino, which would actually necessitate Tony Clark stepping down as well, because you can't replace like the guy under Tony Clark without replacing Tony Clark also. So this has been going on. And it's been kind of wild, and the players have had a lot to say about it. But it seems right now, as we record this, a couple of days before opening day, it seems as if this coup, if you can call it that, feels extreme to call it a coup, because like there hasn't been like an active, you know, it's not like we're voting to oust. It's not, that hasn't happened. But it seems like it's going to be unsuccessful, this effort to replace those two heads of the union. So we'll see what happens. But I don't think this is over. If this is happening 1 year into the CBA,
Yeah.
I don't think we've heard the last of this.
Yeah, I was going to say, if more people get unhappy, then the rumblings are going to start again. Or is the new CBA comes closer, too, then they might want new leadership when that time comes.
But this has been, like, this has been kind of wild because, like, at least Marino has said that players have been threatened and bullied and retaliated against for coming forward with their opinions about this. So this is like, you know, serious heat and serious disagreement happening here.
Yeah, and that's not the point of a union, too. You're supposed to stick together in a union.
Exactly. But no, I feel like even good causes, like, even when the cause is good, we always eat our own. Like, can never agree, and it's unfortunate because
instead of who the real enemy is, but exactly, Rob Manfred.
Exactly. So yeah, there's this sort of discord within the players' union that, you know, that people will continue to report on, and people will continue to monitor and keep talking about as it unfolds. But yeah, this is interesting. It's interesting that there's discord within the union.
The timing is just what's so surprising. Yeah, especially.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like the off season for union stuff.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
CBA is already done and dusted. It's in ink. But yeah. I think that, I don't know. I have no connections to folks within the union, so I have no idea if this is true, but as someone like looking at this from the outside, the timing of it, the fact that it coincides with this slow off season and the Boris clients specifically not getting the contracts that, you know, they wanted, I guess, or they thought that they would get at the beginning of the offseason, and Scott Boras seeming to overplay his hand a little bit in that regard. I think that it's interesting that it's coming up now after that playing out this offseason. Because I think you've got, because Boras represents, you know, those guys, the one percenters of the MLB world, right? Those are the Boras aligned. Those are the Boras people. And that's not me taking a dig at Scott Boras or anything like that. It's just the truth. He represents the top earners in baseball. And so it's interesting that, like, his tactics being less effective this offseason sort of playing out alongside this, like, rift between those types of interests and the interests of the majority that are making way less money than that.
It seems like a shift is coming. I don't know what that shift will be, but it definitely seems like something is on the horizon, and I don't know if it's better or worse.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So the last bit of wider baseball news that we'll cover is that it's sort of labor related a little bit, labor adjacent. Is that longtime Orioles owner Peter Angelos passed away at the age of 94. There was a really good article in Defector that we will share in the show notes and the tweets and such about Angelos and how he was kind of like, in a lot of ways, the ideal team owner. He was, like, as owners go, a very labor-friendly team owner. He was a Baltimorean, and so, you know, a fan of the team, the way that we, like, you know, we were so happy when Steve Cohen bought the Mets because he was a Mets fan, and that the same was true of Peter Angelos. And it's a shame that a lot of his legacy now is his stupid fail sons ruining what he had built. I mean, in his later years, you know, he could have done things differently, but I hope that people remember, you know, the fact that he refused to use scab workers during the strike, for example. and things like that. And just, you know, he was in a lot of ways like good as sports owners go. And then it was really the failed sons that kind of took the Orioles into the direction that they've been in the recent past, where they've been refusing to spend money and things like that, and did the whole Astro style tear down and rebuild. And they, you know, did a power struggle over control of the team and all of that. But now the Orioles are in a new era where they also have a super rich guy owner. So hopefully that works out for them. Unclear if it will. We're in the very early stages. They are just assuming ownership now of the team. But yeah,
fingers crossed. Let's get some billionaire owners out there doing the good fight and paying players what they deserve.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a new era for the Orioles. And I'm just, yeah, I'm thinking about Baltimore for a lot of reasons. For those of you who didn't see the news, the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed early this morning / late last night. And it was horrific. And I'm really sad thinking about it as someone who called Baltimore home for a long time. It's the loss of life is going to be significant. There's already 6 people who are presumed dead, and probably that death toll is going to climb. And there, it's going to be mostly maintenance workers who are going to be among the dead who are on the bridge. And then there were a couple of vehicles on the bridge as well, a few vehicles. Luckily, I mean, it's hard to say luckily during a tragedy like this, but it happened in the middle of the night when there weren't. It could have been so, so much worse, because it could have been during rush hour traffic when there would have been. It would have been like a mass casualty event. But yeah, it's really sad. And my heart is going out to the city, because not only is the loss of life devastating, but it's going to have a devastating economic impact on the city, because the port is closed. This major thoroughfare is closed. Yeah, it's not good. It's really, really sad and horrific. And so Baltimore is dealing with a lot of tragedy right now. And the last city that needs tragedy is Baltimore, and it breaks my heart, really. But hopefully the Orioles will have another good season to sort of take people's minds off of everything else, and we'll see what happens there. But yeah, my heart's going out to Baltimore today.
Same here.
Yeah.
But we will not end the show on that sad note. We will end the show on a happy note, like we always do, with walk-off wins, where each of us talks about something that is making us happy this week, baseball-related or otherwise. Maggie Wiggin, what is your walk-off win for this week?
So I would say normally it would be a really, real slam dunk to say it was the Citi Field 2024 preview event, where I and our podcast producer Brian got to taste a whole bunch of really good food and meet interesting people and generally have a great time. But I cannot overlook a longstanding tradition, which is a callback to my very, very first walk-off win.
Yeah.
5 years ago. I think it was 5 years ago yesterday. Where my walk-off win is that my baby girl had a lovely birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Ellie. She turned
7 years old, which means that Apato turns 5. and it was just a really great day. It was lots of great days. She made her own birthday cake, which she really wanted to do, like, herself. So I thought that was really amazing. And
what kind?
Funfetti.
Oh, yeah. Good choice.
Yeah, it's fine. she loves it. And then I got her a new scooter, a 2-wheeled, like, fancy Razor scooter that lights up with rainbow LEDs. So that is the big thing. And then we had a really lovely birthday party on Sunday. It was like, so Saturday was the day that it was like a biblical downpour. And
yes,
I knew that it wasn't going to be raining the next day, but it was so much rain that I was worried there might be kind of mud pit situations or even some downed tree branches. So I did have to spend the entire day before preparing my house for the possibility of 27-year-olds. But at the end of the day, The sun came out bright and early and warmed everything up just enough. And the 27-year-olds were not in my home. So that is the real walk-off win.
Yeah, it's a win.
But it was just great. Everybody showed up. The kids are so sweet. They make such good kids nowadays. Did you know that? That they're making kids like bonkers good. It's pretty amazing. So that is my walk-off win, as always this time of year, celebrating my baby girl, who is remarkable, and appropriately a potto too.
I can't believe that this podcast is 5 years old, everybody.
Yeah, that's wild.
We're going to kindergarten, you guys. It's happening.
Wow.
We gotta learn our numbers.
Gotta learn to read and
our
write.
Colors, animal sounds.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Oh, and then we can have our little kindergarten graduation.
Mm. Oh my god. So yeah, soon this podcast will be old enough to read. That's crazy.
Or if maybe it's already reading.
Maybe it's already reading.
Over,
yeah. I think I was reading at 5.
Yeah, I think I was. Well, mm-hmm. I'm also the daughter of a librarian, so I don't know if that I'm typical.
Now I get to make everyone hate me because I am hyperlexic and apparently just started reading when I was 3 years old without anybody teaching me. So
wow.
There we go. That's a thing, apparently. Cool. Yeah. I mean, it's cool so that I don't remember it.
Yeah.
I just remember reading when everybody else was already reading.
Yeah.
That's a good gift to have.
Indeed. No complaints.
Linda Cerevich, what is your walk-off win for this week?
Well, it was a slow week for me, but I decided my walk-up win was I was watching World Figure Skating Championships on Saturday? Yes. And what? I love me some Nathan Chen. Like, I stayed up way too late waiting, you know, for the last Olympics, you know, to watch him get his gold. And it was totally worth it. Love Nathan Chen. But this kid that the United States produced now is incredible.
I know exactly who you're talking about. My mom just messaged the video to me earlier today.
Oh my God. I've never seen anything like that on ice skates. A quad axle.
That looked like nothing. That looked like I was like, oh yeah, that's easy. Like, he just like did not break a sweat.
No, I don't understand. I don't understand the physics behind how he did what he did.
Like, I think he did like a quad lutz and a half toe loop.
Yes.
And then a triple something.
And then like he was just throwing stuff in just to do it. I don't understand. Like, he was breaking records. He scored higher than Nathan Chen ever did. And it wasn't that he just did the quad axel. He did 6 quads altogether.
Everyone was perfect.
And it was flawless.
All of them.
Every single one. Flawless. Not a wobble, not a misplaced step. And like we said, he just made it look easy.
I guess Maggie's right. The kids really are built different now.
Yes. I'm
telling you, man.
Well, because I think he's like 18, 19 years old.
He looks it.
He looks like a baby.
He would just like lift him with a biggie.
Like, are we sure he's not 12 years old? Like, because they're like, oh, if he does the quad axe, it'll be right here, like right off the bat. And you can see him like really geared up for it. It's like, oh, here we go. And he did it like nothing. And the height. It blew my mind. Like, okay, can you continue that into 2026? So in the Milan Olympics, because it is just like, I can only, Simone Biles is Simone Biles, but what he's doing for figure skating is like what Simone did for gymnastics. Like, he's doing things that nobody else can do.
That's so exciting.
And he just blew everybody else out of the water. Like, it didn't even come close. And also the guy who came in third, he was in 19th after the short program.
What?
So he just went out there and said fuck it and did the routine of his life. And
my man got a bronze medal. Yes. I don't know. I say my man. I don't know who it is, but he's my man now.
He should be 19th. He's awesome. Because I guess he figured he had nothing to lose. So he just went out there and, you know, just went for it, and he threw in a backflip, the illegal backflip.
Yes.
And he still got the bronze.
There's nothing better than an illegal move. I can't explain it.
Yes, I support it. So I also support.
Why are backflips illegal?
Because I guess they're too dangerous.
Yeah. They probably should be illegal.
I guess.
But if you're good at it, like, you're not telling the other
there
people.
There should be the Surya Bonaly exception.
Yes. Yes. She got.
Oh, actually, that is the. So that actually does remind me of the reason. It's something about landing on one foot versus two.
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
I see.
That's right. Yeah. But still.
Still.
If you can do it, I say go for it.
That is kind of the whole idea.
Yes. But, like, it's just cool. If you can do something cool, you should get points for it. But,
yeah. Whatever. Like how Simone Biles does the Biles.
The whole point of figure skating and gymnastics?
Do something
cool stuff.
Yeah. And do it to music, and you'll get a good score.
That's the best. Cool stuff to music. Sign me up.
So if you can go out and watch this kid's routine, highly recommend, because it's just amazing to watch. And I wish him nothing but success in future endeavors. And next year's World Championships are in Boston, and I'm seriously thinking of going, because it's the first time 9 years has been in Boston. So
We'll have to talk about that, Linda.
Yes.
Good choice for walk-off win, by the way.
Yes, thank you.
I'm going to recommend that this kid do a routine to Narco, because think about how hard it would go for a quad axle
to
the trumpets.
We put that in the universe.
I would lose my mind.
I'm hearing the slice of the blades in with the bass beat,
man.
And I'm all in.
Oh, that would hit so hard. Now, his routine was set to the Succession theme.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So... it's still hard to compete with Nathan Chen's Rocket Man, though.
It's a classic.
Yeah. So I still have a special place in my heart for Nathan Chen, but this kid is the future of figure skating.
But yeah, this doesn't just apply to that guy. Like, anybody, do a figure skating routine to Narco.
Yes.
You're welcome for the idea. Thank you.
Yeah, go for it.
Please.
You'll go viral, because now everybody plays Narco, so go for it.
Yeah. We need Edwin Diaz, the ice skating routine. Thank you.
How cool.
So my walk-off win for this week, I have many. I have March has been a very good month, a very insane month, but a very good month for me. So last weekend was my bachelorette party. Which was really, really awesome. I wasn't planning on having a bachelorette party, but back in November, when I told my friends this, when they asked me, are you having a bachelorette party? And I said, I don't think so. They said, we don't accept that answer. So they were like, we're throwing one. You can come if you want. So we just went to Baltimore, rented an Airbnb, and did a brewery crawl and went to some of my favorite breweries, went to some of my favorite restaurants, and just kind of like hit up my old Baltimore haunts, and I had an incredible time, and it was really, really nice. They made streamers out of photos of everyone's pets.
Oh,
the best. Aww. They cut out like headshots of everyone's pets, everyone who was in attendance, and strung them together and made streamers out of them and decorated the Airbnb with them. It was beautiful. And they also made little cardboard cutouts on sticks of blue and orange.
Aww.
For me to carry around with me. Aww. And it was really, really cute. And we even played a game where, so traditionally, for like bachelorettes or like bridal showers or whatever, people know about the game where the bride and the groom have to answer the same question, kind of like Newlywed Game style, or like you have to say like, who's more likely to be, who's more likely to be stressed out if this would happen, and you raise like one person's indicator or the other and you have to try to match and you're not looking at each other, that sort of game. Except in this case, the who's more likely was not Michael or I, it was blue or orange. And they had Michael answer all the questions. They had me answer all the questions. And they tried, and we see if we could match. So that was really, really fun. And so, yeah, we just did a brewery crawl. I was very worried about the brewery crawl because it was St. Patrick's Day weekend.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, this is going to be a mess. But luckily, I correctly told them to avoid Fells Point and we would go to the breweries that were kind of off the beaten path a little bit. And I was right to do that because they were all like basically empty. Everyone was crawling at the bars along the water. And so I was like, we just basically got empty breweries and it was awesome.
Oh, that worked out great.
Yeah, it did. So that was really fun. And then this weekend was a double header of awesomeness because on Saturday when it was doing a biblical downpour, we, had my nephew's first birthday party. So yeah, very, very similar birthday to Ellie, not the same exact day, but, my nephew, his actual birthday is today. But
happy birthday, little dude. Yeah.
Happy birthday, Luke. Aww. Happy first birthday to Luke. But yeah, we celebrated his birthday on Saturday. Luckily it was indoors. The venue was indoors. But you know, everybody came in like windswept and rain soaked, to the venue. But it was, yeah, you know, at a really, really tasty restaurant, in the city, in the village where, Michael's sister and his brother-in-law live. And we had a really good time celebrating Luke's first birthday. And there was a musician there playing songs for all the kids. Michael sent videos to Kellyanne because she was losing her mind over it. It was very adorable. There were little sing-alongs with bubbles and everything. It was very cute. And delicious barbecue food. It was amazing. Ooh. It was really good. There was like pulled pork, mac and cheese, aww, brisket, barbecue chicken.
That's the way to go.
The whole cornbread, the whole nine yards, delicious food. Yeah, so it was really, really nice. And then the second part of the doubleheader on Sunday was that Michael and I took our engagement photos at Citi Field.
Yay! Which
was really awesome. It was really, it was so awesome, but also so surreal and bizarre to be in the stadium by ourselves. That has never happened to me before, obviously.
It's like being in school when it's closed.
Yeah, it really is. It was really weird. But yeah, I had so much fun doing the photos. I was so nervous because, like, I'm not a photogenic person. I am not a person who enjoys being in front of the camera. Or feels like natural having my photo taken like at all. So I was kind of nervous about this because I've never done a photo shoot before. Like I've never been shot by a professional photographer. I guess one time I got like a headshot for like professional stuff at a conference. They were like doing like, get your professional photo taken for free. Get your like LinkedIn profile picture. And so I did that, but that was like, it felt like your school photo. It didn't feel like a photo shoot, right? Where you're like posing or like anything like that. I'd never done like a real photo shoot before. So this was the first time and I was really nervous about it, but our photographer is fantastic. It's our same photographer who's shooting our wedding. And so it almost felt like we got to do a little dress rehearsal for the wedding. And he was so good. Like, clearly knew how to put someone at ease who is not used to this sort of thing, knew exactly what to have us do and like to make it look really nice. And
had he ever shot at Citi Field before?
No, he hadn't, because he's local to here, to DC. He traveled for our photo shoot, which was so kind. And so yeah, he's never done, but we joked to him, now you have this experience under your belt, so if a couple ever asks you to do a photo shoot at Nat's Park, now you're prepared.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, you're so right.
you helped him out.
Exactly. We all had a great time. And this is the surprise part that I don't think I even told Linda and Maggie. So they're going to be surprised by this. What, at the very end of the photo shoot, so we started on Shea Bridge. We did Shea Bridge, which was freezing because it was, even though it was nice, the sun did come out, as Maggie said, on Sunday, but it was windy and cold.
And the Shea Bridge is always a wind tunnel.
Yes, it was cold as hell. I bought a million pizzas.
It was a massive wind tunnel. The wind was like howling and it was in the shade. And I, like, literally my hands went numb within seconds. Because obviously we're not wearing coats for this. We're wearing like nice dress up clothes. I had like open toed shoes on. We did a costume change halfway through. So I spent half of it in like a nice dress and the other half in like a Lindor jersey and jeans and a hat. But yeah, so it was cold on Shea Bridge. It started off freezing. But then we moved to the sunny side, the sunlit side of the stadium. And that was better, kind of down like the third baseline / left field. And that was much better because we were in the sun. The wind stopped howling. So we took some photos like in the seats, and then we went down to the field and went on the down the right field, down the left field line a little bit, took some photos on the field. The only unfortunate thing was that the tarp was on the field because it had biblically downpoured the whole day before. So we couldn't get like all the infield, like any of the infield or like home plate or anything like that because this tarp was on the field. So we kind of had to like strategically do our shots so that you wouldn't see the tarp in the background of all the pictures. But I still think we got some really awesome ones. So we did that. And then we went inside, did a costume change, did our jerseys. We did some more field photos. Then we went up into some of the like suites, like seats, like the really cool seats on like the 300 and 400 levels from the suites. Ooh. And got some photos there. And then the last thing we did was we went inside one of the new like Mike Piazza like club or whatever it is. The Piazza club. I can't remember what it's called. But basically the back of it, like the rear of it, the windows go face out into the parking lot, but there's like skyline views from some of them. So we did shots there. But the cool thing about that was when we went into the suite, the new dance team was rehearsing. I got to see them rehearse like one on one. Like we were the only other people in there.
Oh, you got your own private show.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, that's cool.
We had no idea that they would be rehearsing because we had like a shout out to Thomas. He was the guy who like took us around everywhere, like the photographer, Michael and I. He took us to each of our little destinations. I don't think he knew either that they were rehearsing. And so he took us into the suite and was like, oh. And we were like, oh my God, it's the dance team. And our photographer, who's like not familiar with the Mets / baseball really at all, was like, there's a dance team. And I was like, it's new this year. So that was just like we obviously just like kind of stayed, like kept our distance from them and tried to do our stuff like away from where they were. But oh, it was really cool. I just walked in and there was the dance team rehearsing.
Oh, that's such a fun surprise.
It was so cool. I know, Maggie, you got to see them at the food event, right? They were there.
Yes. And amazing.
Great. Yes. I'm excited. Some people are dunking on it and I don't like that. Stop dunking on it.
I don't like that.
I think
either.
It's fun.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, God forbid we should have more fun in baseball.
Yeah, and they looked great during rehearsal, I'll just say.
And also, like, my niece does dance, and she's a big Met fan, and I think she'll really like them.
I think that your niece has a future on the dance team.
That's what I said. I'm like, when she turns 18, she should absolutely try out for the dance team.
100%. So that was like the fun surprise of the photo shoot for me. It was really cool. So yeah, it was just like an awesome past couple of weekends, just filled with love and friends and family. And I'm so full and so happy. So that's my walk-off one for this week. If you want to check out all of our amazing pods, you can go to homerunapplesauce.com. You can support our work on Patreon. If you go to homerunapplesauce.com, there's a link for the Patreon, but you can also go to the Patreon directly, patreon.com/homerunapplesauce. The $5 a month really, really helps us. So if you have been on the fence about becoming a patron, please do so. We have a Patreon exclusive episode coming up for opening day and opening day extravaganza, cross pod extravaganza for you guys. So we're going to get some more Patreon exclusive content as the season ramps up. So look forward to that. You can follow Home Run Applesauce on social media, on Twitter and Instagram at HR Applesauce. You can get in touch with this show by email, aa.apodoftheirown@gmail.com. You can also follow us and get in touch with us on social media. We are at A Pod of Their Own on all of the things. You can also follow each of us on Twitter. I am at Petite PhD. Where are you, Linda?
At Linda Servage.
And you, Maggie? Oh, Maggie had to go. I didn't realize. Sorry, everybody. At Maggie162. Maggie's at Maggie162. I wasn't paying attention to my Zoom. Maggie is at Maggie162. You can subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts from. Just search Home Run Applesauce and you should be able to find our entire suite of pods right there. The original intro and outro music to this podcast is by Bunga. A quick programming note, we are now continuing weekly recordings. Now that the season is underway, you will be able to find us. This show is kind of off peak, if you want to use transit terms. We're recording this on a Tuesday night randomly, and so it will be in your feeds probably on Wednesday. But usually we will record Monday nights and be on your feeds on Tuesday mornings. So we will resume weekly recordings from here on out. So keep an eye out for us every week in your feed on Tuesday mornings. Let's go Mets. And don't forget, there is no crying in podcasting. Happy opening day, everybody.
We made it. Woo!